Part 2. For my upcoming weekly family Zoom with my brother, my sister, and a family friend, one of our assigned topics has to do with conspiracy theories. Specifically, if there are any we find personally attractive enough to at least semi-endorse. I thought of a couple that are minimally interesting to me. The Kennedy assassination, an enigma that seems perpetually intriguing to my generation, traumatized by that grievous moment. And alien life. I actually enjoy watching the cheesy Ancient Alien series on TV from time to time, and believe there is intelligent life throughout the universe. Though I'm not persuaded it has either sought out, made, or wants any contact with ours, which it may not feel qualifies as intelligent. I feel no personal urgency to endorse any specific solution theories to these enigmas. They are simply entertaining for me to think about. So my initial thought process for my report was brief and shallow. Two things, done. What did, though, engage my thinking was the larger question of why humans seem to be attracted to conspiracy theories in the first place. The vast majority of them appear, to non-adherents at least, patently inane, arranged via a logic that may be internally consistent but is completely disconnected from external fact or evidence-based reality. Yet they still seem to have a deep appeal to the human imagination. And these days, they are especially pervasive and insidious organizational motifs in the political, religious, and social arenas of our public life, an index to the level of trauma recent events have induced. The very fact that most of us have ensconced in our personal lexicons tropes like QAnon, Pizzagate, and vaccine-injected RFID microchips, the first three I thought of in about 5 seconds, demonstrates the attractive power of the strange rabbit hole-type belief systems that subtend them. So that's what I thought about. When I began to ask myself why this was so, the first thing that crossed my mind was one of my go-to critiques of the modern imagination, especially its hyper-expression in the U.S. these days. The inability to tolerate liminal states of mind. Those situations, ideas, or experiences that are ambiguous, ambivalent, anomalous, especially when they have two quite distinct, seemingly contradictory, but mutually essential aspects, which is, according to quantum mechanics, exactly what the physical universe we live in is like at the subatomic level. And in my view, at least, exactly what human intelligence is still good for discerning and attending to, now that computers, robots, and AI can, theoretically, do all the more basic things humans used to do to make sense and money. The everyday term I personally prefer to name such states of mind is mystery. One that was instilled in me when I was quite young. Middle school age, I'd say. Ironically, by Sister Pascal, the nun teaching my after-school Catholic catechism class. Hardly a venue where you'd expect liminality would find a good home. She was introducing the concept of the Trinity, the three persons in one nature of the Christian God. But instead of giving us a long-winded theological disquisition, which is what I was expecting, and there are many of those I now know hair-splittingly arcane, she said it was simply a mystery that you should, as a good Catholic, accept on faith without expecting to figure it out by conventional analytic means. Or not accept it, of course, though she didn't proffer that option. In either case, there was no point seeking its solution. It was unfathomable. Instead of being disappointed by this punt, I was delighted by it. I was already by nature inclined to see all manner of things in this world as fundamentally mysterious. It was what made them interesting to me, worth exploring. And now I felt fully authorized to indulge my curiosity, not by trying to resolve such enigmas, putting an end to inquiry, but to sustain attention on them, in many cases, extending now over my lifetime. Almost immediately, as I remember that moment, I felt happy and relaxed, absent confusion or anxiety. And I seized on this concept, mystery, as a worthy way to name all those life events, spiritual conundrums, and intellectual enigmas that resist explanation via the most commonly available instrument, language. It's not that mysteries could not be understood, nor was language useless to that process. It was more that a mystery had to be first encountered via an experience, which I believe back then and still do, despite the protestations of postmodernist ideologies, arises prior to and aside from words. That language can then explore along many paths without ever reaching a singular destination. A process that leads finally to wisdom. A highly specialized form of knowledge that emerges after language has done its work, resists commodification, and most importantly, never achieves finalization. I put those two words, experience and wisdom, in quotation marks because they are, in their own right, mysteries, to me at least. In other words, I began to develop for myself a theory of imagination and an idea of the role thinking could play in enacting it, analogous to the model of quantum theory I was beginning to learn about via my fascination with physics. What a great gift that has been. It has allowed me to contemplate the depths of the material reality of our universe, which quantum mechanics says is similarly unfathomable, except mathematically or metaphorically, all kinds of spiritual, ethical, and philosophical systems seeking their common ground, as I was doing with this array of stacked books, without feeling compelled to choose one exclusively, becoming captive to any specific ism. And of course, poetry, the appreciation of which always exceeds any critical ideology that culture has invented to interpret it, as in the case of one of my favorites, Emily Dickinson. Unless you can hold two or more distinct and often mutually contradictory feelings, insights, and thoughts in mind simultaneously, you will never get any of her poems, nor those of many worthy others, nor any of the other mysteries that arise from being alive in this astonishing universe. So, what to say about this general intolerance for states of inner irresolution, often produced by what Naomi Klein calls above a shock, which provokes a discomfort that demands relief by any story available, no matter how bizarre its narrative line. My go-to source for thinking about matters of this sort is John Keats, specifically what he famously called, in a letter to his brother George in 1817, negative capability. That is, he says, when one is capable of being in uncertainties, mysteries, doubts, without any irritable reaching after fact and reason. In another 1817 letter, this one to Benjamin Bailey, he recommends the authenticity of the imagination as an antidote for the inefficacy of what he calls consecutive reasoning to fathom the most important and interesting matters that inevitably concern us in this life. Keats may seem a remote and problematic source to go to here for several reasons. He's writing this stuff over two centuries ago at the height of the Romantic movement, which has long since passed its sell-by date. He mentions most of it briefly and offhandedly in these otherwise mostly personal missives, never following up with any in-depth explanations of these concepts there or elsewhere. He was a poet, a suspect source of truth in Western philosophy ever since Socrates exiled poets from his republic. And he was only 22 at the time, hardly a seasoned intellectual. Still, there is a brilliance to the insight that, to me, has an uncanny currency in a world that, on the one hand, now recognizes as a matter of verifiable scientific fact the material uncertainty, see Heisenberg's principle of uncertainty, built into the fabric of the physical universe, and on the other hand, is manically obsessed with relieving even the slightest twinges of psychic uncertainty with any sort of off-the-shelf consecutive reasoning, no matter how detached from reality it might be. Better always, I think, to relax comfortably in the liminal spaces of irresolution, the true resting state of reality, in my view, than to sacrifice sanity for the illusion of clarity or stability. None of this is to suggest that inner states of irresolution produce confusion, that is, nothing is knowable, cynicism, therefore nothing matters, or stasis, that is, so all available options are equal. Quite the opposite. They are ongoingly generative of new knowledge. Nor is it to say that closure is precluded. One can, at any moment, choose simply to stop inquiring into a situation or problem for any reason at all or no reason at all. Time and mental energy are finite, after all. It is, though, to say that deferring to stories provided by outside authorities that purport to fully explain the mystery at hand is a certain path both to delusion and loss of personal agency.